Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Here on our show, we like to talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. Without geek speak or a bunch of acronyms, we just want to talk about technology that's important to us and important to you.
We also want to thank Cardinal Capital. To business owners and CEOs, hopefully you have a good relationship with your lender. Even if you do, sometimes you face other challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, a want to level out your cash flow, or a desire to buy new equipment because you're in growth mode. If this describes you, give Cardinal Capital a call, whatever your need or challenge. They have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business, and they want you to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business, so they can present your needs to a lending institution that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important for lenders, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solution for your situation, all while being fun and easy to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net. You can also call them 225-308-3700 or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's start off a little tech gumbo today.
Sounds great.
Beginning with the news and updates, kind of get big into the satellite internet access. 2024 has really been good for Starlink so far.
Yeah, they are continuing to get better. The hardware is continuing to mature. Their back-end software is continuing to mature. Their product offerings are continuing to get better. But this is a service which is moving out of its infancy and starting to hit those teenage years.
So Starlink has been providing internet access for about 3 or 4 years now, and the bandwidth is getting much, much faster. You can get bandwidths up to 300 megabits of throughput, which is pretty good. And the availability, if you want to get internet access via Starlink, instead of having that backlog waiting to get a dish, you can go to Costco and pick one up now.
Their huge back order log somehow vanished. Not quite sure. Did they meet all that demand? Did that man drop off? Either way, you can now have a dish sit at your house. You can have a dish or your camp. You can have a dish on your camper. You can have a dish on your yacht crossing the ocean.
And it's stable. It's very fast. And when you want internet access to really work, it's there for you. Now, it's rather expensive compared to other forms of internet. But if you can't get internet at all, then price is not really that much of an issue for you.
Yes, this is not and likely will never replace your ISP. You're still going to have the cable into your house if that is an option for you. For a large number of reasons, that will be a faster, stable, cheaper option. But if you're out in the boonies and you still want a little bit of connection back to the real world, or you're in a camper traveling around and you want to just be able to go look at what the next campsite you're traveling to is, this is a great bridge solution for that middle ground.
Yeah, that 200 to 300 megabits of throughput still going to cost you around $150 a month. That's a little bit more than your typical cable-based ISP is going to be. But if you're really into, like you said, traveling, if you're a mobile user, then, man, this is a pretty good deal. I mean, yes, it's going to be a couple hundred bucks, but if you're in New Zealand, hey, they're even offering a discount now for you. You can get a 50% price cut or 50% of the bandwidth.
And I think this is them really figuring out who their market is, that the vast majority of their users are probably not pushing that upper limit of their bandwidth. And so if you can say, hey, look, I see that you're only using 20 up to 40, maybe 50 megs in 99% of the time. Well, just pay for that. We'll cut your price in half because that's what you're actually using. And now all of a sudden people are going to say, ah, now you have my attention. It wasn't worth that, the $150 a month, but $75 a month. Now that's much closer to the value that I'm actually getting from it.
And realistically, if you're just one or two people and you're not trying to run a major business, if you're just want to do some Google searching and browse the web, send email, check Facebook, things like that, then 50 megabits of bandwidth is plenty. I mean, you could stream movies fine with 50 megabits. Now, if you're a household full of kids and they're all banging the internet as hard as they can, and you're working from home and your wife's working from home, yeah, okay, maybe you do need that full 200 to 300 megabits of bandwidth, or maybe you still need that terrestrial based internet where it's 500 or a gigabit of throughput. Okay, fine. But Starlink is really kind of maturing. It's gotten very stable. And the fact that they're opening up their packages to offer more programs for more people makes it a really viable offer.
Yeah, and you don't just have to take our word for it. HughesNet, their main competition is hemorrhaging people. HughesNet was the premier satellite-based internet company. And at the end of 2020, they had 1.5 million customers. At the end of 2023, they are down to 1 million customers. They have shed a full third of their customer base in 3 years.
And HughesNet is very quick to come out and say, that's okay. Most of that 500,000 clients who've left over the past several years were residential clients, and that's not really our focus. We're much more interested in the enterprise-level business clients. So we're okay losing a full one-third of our customers because that's not the client base we're really going after anyway.
If this would have been a choice that they had made entirely on their own, maybe I would believe they had run the numbers and they had come to this decision. But this is 100% them scrambling. This is PR spin. This is tail spin. And they are doing anything to pull out of it, because you have to think the only thing that's going to keep them in business is momentum. That a lot of people who have their HughesNet satellite just don't want to mess with it because it does what it needs to do. But they are only going to continue to hemorrhage out clients. And I would not be surprised if they fold within 5 years.
They even just put up the Jupiter 3 of the newest satellite last year sometime, and to try and keep up, because it now gives you 100 megabits of throughput. Well, okay. That's still half of what Starlink is offering, and Starlink has almost 6,000 satellites up now.
And Starlink's not alone. Amazon is also about to deploy their own version of this. They're calling it Project Kuiper. This is still very, very early, but they think they're going to be even faster. They think they're going to be even better than Starlink.
So right now, they actually have two satellites up. They have KuiperSat-1 and KuiperSat-2, and they're going to start testing some different terminals. Up to 200 different customer terminals is what they're planning to test later in 2024, so that they can put up approximately 3,500 of their own satellite dishes within the next several years.
To put up in perspective, Amazon is looking to test 200 customers. Starlink is at 2 million and HughesNet's at 1 million. We just said that Starlink is past its infancy and it is really coming into its own. This is Project Kuiper, 5 years ago. And so they have a long way to go to catch Starlink. Starlink really does have the combination of those SpaceX rockets. They have this down to a science. And so Amazon's got a lot of ground to make up here, but I could absolutely see a rivalry here. I'm glad there's competition in this space. If you would have asked 10 years ago, would there be competition in the space-based internet business? I'd have said, I don't think space-based internet will be a thing. So the fact that there'll be multiple internet service providers is already fantastic in and of itself.
Especially when Amazon is promising 1 gigabit of download speeds and 400 megabits of upload speeds. That's a pretty good bandwidth there. And they're saying that they're going to be very cost competitive compared to Starlink, and but they're going to offer a lot more bandwidth. Well, 3 to 5 years from now, when they've got their dishes up, my guess is Starlink's going to be offering gigabit speeds.
One of the things we've been critical of Starlink in the past is overpromising and underdelivering. That some of their projections for their customer base size, they didn't meet. And so we should apply that same skepticism here to Project Kuiper. Now, they haven't put a timeline on 1 gig download speeds, but that's what I get here to my apartment in New York City. And so that is, you're really moving some ones and zeros there. I'm curious as to, is that a 2025 number or is that a 2030 number?
My guess is it's closer to 2030 than it is to 2025. So have you heard about the Apple Ring?
They're trying new hardware in any shape and any size.
So the new wearable that is coming to a finger near you, instead of the Apple Watch or the Google Watch or any one of the Fitbits or anything like that, where you actually have a watch and can see the time and know how far you've run and everything. These new wearables, one's made by Aura. There's another one being put out by Samsung. It's going to tie back to the Galaxy phones. They're going to be tracking your heart rate, your body temperature, things like that. But it's just going to be as a ring, not a full display watch.
That's the thing that I don't quite understand, is that this article that we're reading is speculating the Apple Ring will be somewhere between $250 and $500. That's a whole lot of money, because I currently have the Fitbit Versa 4, I think, and it has all the same biomechanics. It tracks your heart rate, your temperature, your blood oxygen, in addition to being a watch and connecting back to my phone. And so it also tracks steps. It also can be a payment device that it tap to pay. This watch does a whole lot. And it's also in that like $250 to $300 range. And that's, for all the things that it does, that's about what I would expect to pay. And so if you're telling me that the Apple Ring is going to do less and cost more, I'm skeptical.
Well, it will have the Apple logo on it, so that's a worth at least a 1.5x, you know, over anything else. I agree with you. I want the watch. I want to know what time it is. This ring is not going to tell me what time of day it is. This ring is not going to tell me how many steps I've had for the day. This ring is going to be shiny and it's going to be on my finger. Well, I've got one of those. It's called a wedding band. I don't need another ring. I don't wear a whole lot of jewelry to begin with. And so this, just to me, I know you're way before your time. You don't remember the mood rings back in the 80s, where you would go buy these rings and they would change color based upon what your mood was. It was really sensing your temperature, but they called it a mood ring. Well, that's what this sounds like to me.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the Apple Watch has been so successful, is that it was a watch first. At least it did that. And then it also had the display component. And so you really were getting the value there. And they figured out the health stuff on the back end later on. They're like, oh, people want these things. But am I going to have an Apple Watch and the ring? That's what I don't understand. Well, if I am not going to have the watch and the ring, why would I pick the ring and then a standard watch? Is that what I'm going to do here? That just doesn't make a lot of sense as to how many people are going to say, I want my watch to go backwards as a functional device. Because it's supposed to be an everyday wearable. This is not just something fancy that you only dress up in. This is supposed to be a forever piece.
Okay, so I get it. If you're somebody who doesn't like to wear a watch, but you want that trackable and you don't want to have to lug that phone in your hand all the time. Okay. But I mean, the phone is still in your pocket. It'll do step counting. It'll do all those other things. I guess it won't track your heart rate and your body temperature and how well you slept at night. So if you have your ring, that ring on, because you're not a watch person. You don't like the watch. And you can pull your phone out of your pocket and see what time it is. If that's your play, well, okay, I get it. But I'm not seeing this. This is just a bad idea that's going to live a quick life and have a quick death.
It's fascinating because Aura is currently the number one in the space, and Apple is taking a swing at it, and Samsung is taking a swing at it. So there's a lot of competition here, but I just don't see competition for how many total users.
Something that is working is the crackdown on password sharing.
Yeah, and you know that it's working because it's coming to Max. It used to be HBO Max. Now it's Max, the one for HBO. Don't love the branding change, but I'm not in charge. Disney Plus has already said that they're doing it. Netflix has already done it. And so this is what you're seeing, that none of these platforms are profitable. All of these platforms have to get profitable at some point in time. And forcing the millennials off their parents' account is one of the ways to do it.
Especially when you look at Peacock and Paramount, they're talking about a merger. So when they merge, then, you know, that's one less platform that's out there. But, you know, they're going to mandate the crackdown because they've got to get the return on their money. It's just fascinating that we were both very skeptical as to whether or not this password sharing thing would actually work. We thought more people would be canceling their accounts. And it turns out people really want their streaming platforms. And I had a great run. I got it for free from mom and dad, but I'll start paying for my own now. Okay, fine. You got me.
I think that's part of it. I think the big thing also is adding the cheap version with ads. That it's, I'm not going to pay for the $15 a month, but for the $6 a month, and you're going to throw ads in the middle. Yeah, fine. You know, $6 a month, that's low enough to where I'm not angry about it. I'm not happy about it, but whatever. That's what that number is. It's right there in the, okay.
The difference is, though, a lot of people went to that $6 and then they got mad at the ads. And so it's like, okay, fine. For $6 more, for $7-$8 more a month, I don't have to have these ads. All right, great. Yes, everyone jumped on that $6, but they remembered why they hated advertising. Now they're back to all the plans are back maxing out.
I'm guessing they saw it in the data that one day these companies will crack even. And you have to think that there has to be a way to make money on this, because cable companies were notoriously profitable for 30 years. And if you're telling me that you can't take basically the same content and just repackage it, plus decades of libraries that people love and adore, there has to be a way to make money off of that. They're still working out all the kinks, but I think that we're closing in on profitability for these mega platforms, because they just can't continue to lose money. It just doesn't make sense, both how and two, at some point in time, the bill comes due.
Part of the reason why the cable companies were so profitable is they were monopolies. There was no competition in the local markets. When you were a Cox or a Verizon or a Cablevision or whichever company was providing cable TV for that local market, you own the market. So everybody had to jump on, and you could then have so many more people using your services all going down one pipe. You could make it so much more cost affordable for you, the business, because you've got everybody in a neighborhood using your bandwidth, everybody using your TV access, everyone using your system. Well, when you've got to go out and fight for all the different companies, well, my streaming platform is better than their streaming platform, I like this stream. Oh, but I would really love to see, that I got to pay for two platforms now. And the cost factors become more. The idea that, and we beat that story to get a long time ago, cutting the cord is not cutting cost. You're going to pay the same amount whether you're on cable or doing all the streaming services.
Yeah, and I think part of it as well is the fact that it's more obvious what it is that you're paying for. That whenever you had that cable subscription, you just said, I'm subscribing to all the cable channels, but those content providers negotiated for different rates. So ESPN was the vast majority of the amount of your monthly bill went directly to ESPN. And so all of the other channels were actually pretty cheap, and it was really just an ESPN package. Well, now that ESPN is separate, it's under the Disney umbrella, all those other channels, which used to get lumped in basically for free, people are saying, I don't know if I need that as much. You know, all the fact that cable started at roughly channel 15 and went to channel 70, well, that's a whole lot of space that you have to justify. Do I really want to spend money on those things, which I just never had to consider in the past?
We want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. Based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, General Informatics is a premier IT managed service provider delivering exceptional managed IT solutions to a diverse base of customers across the southeastern United States. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 180 plus employees, including technicians, engineers, program designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of business schools and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula. So proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
If you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. and the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear this or previous episodes, check out our podcast available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time we post a new episode. If you like our show or you have any suggestions, let us know on our website at www.techgumbo.net. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.